Jesus said, where our treasure is, well, that is exactly where our heart will also be.
Welcome to Mission 66, where Scripture meets real life. Today, John Matthews and Esther Sisulu are in the book of Ezra, sharing insights from Pastor Luis Seau's teaching. Ezra is a book that talks about the rediscovery of God's covenant and a return to worship after many years of exile. Download your study guide at mission66.org and let's get started. Here is Esther.
Today, we'll be learning from the book of Ezra, who was a Jewish priest in Persia, but came to Jerusalem after the Babylonian captivity of Judah. Now, we're in chapters 7 and 8, which on the timeline is where Ezra the priest arrives in Jerusalem following the building of the Second Temple. And here's our teacher, John Matthews, who will bring us today's theme, the second wave.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to this latest episode of Mission 66. And we've seen in previous episodes that the first part of the book of Ezra focuses on the first wave of these Judean exiles who are returning home from Persia to Jerusalem, where they rebuilt the ancient temple under the leadership of Zerubbabel. Now, he was a civic leader. He was a descendant of one of the kings of Judah, actually. And chapter 7 of Ezra begins a second part of the book. And this bit focuses on the second wave of returnees when 1,754 exiles returned to Jerusalem. And among those was Ezra himself. Now, he is the one who writes this book, Ezra, that bears his name. And this second wave led by him occurs in 458 BC before Christ, significantly later then, you might note, than the initial return during King Cyrus's reign. So let's read chapter 7. This is how it goes. Now, after this, in the reign of Artaxerxes, king of Persia, Ezra, the son of Seraiah, son of Azariah, son of Hilkiah, son of Shalem, son of Zadok, son of Ahitub, son of Amariah, son of Azariah, son of Meroith, son of Zerahiah, son of Uzi, son of Buki, son of Abishua, son of Phinehas, son of Eleazar, stay with me, son of Aaron, the chief priest, this Ezra went up from Babylonia. And he was a scribe skilled in the law of Moses that the Lord, the God of Israel, had given. And the king granted him all that he asked, for the hand of the Lord his God was on him. So that first paragraph just establishes Ezra as a bona fide priest after the order of Aaron. And that's the reason for that, listing of his lineage, effectively. So the calling of God's upon him to lead what was coming. And that was pretty much a revival in Jerusalem. Verse 7 says that there went up also to Jerusalem in the seventh year of Artaxerxes, the king, some of the people of Israel, and some of the priests and Levites, the singers and gatekeepers, and the temple servants. And Ezra came to Jerusalem in the fifth month, which was in the seventh year of the king. For on the first day of the first month, he began to go up from Babylonia. And on the first day of the fifth month, he came to Jerusalem, for the good hand of his God was on him. Isn't that lovely? God is so good. And Ezra, it says in verse 10, had set his heart to study the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach his statutes and rules in Israel. Isn't that interesting as well? Not just set his heart to study it. Many of us can do that, but he wanted to study it in order that he could do it. And not just for his own purposes, but then to be able to teach others and help others. So in that verse, we see Ezra's heart revealed, his desire to learn, to exemplify, and to help others. And then in verse 12, it gives us the official letter of commendation which King Artaxerxes had given to Ezra in case anyone tried to question him. So it was his authority, effectively. And it gives permission, this letter, for anyone from Judah who wanted to go back home to do just that. It also gives Ezra permission to take from the royal treasury anything that he needed. Now, the original text for Ezra chapter 7, verse 12 to 26 is in Aramaic, not Hebrew. Verse 12, here we go. Artaxerxes, king of kings, to Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of the God of heaven. Peace. And now, I make a decree that any one of the people of Israel or their priests or Levites in my kingdom who freely offers to go to Jerusalem may go with you. For you are sent by the king and his seven counselors to make inquiries about Judah and Jerusalem according to the law of your God, which is in your hand. And also to carry the silver and gold that the king and his counselors have freely offered to the God of Israel, whose dwelling is in Jerusalem, with all the silver and gold that you shall find in the whole province of Babylonia, and with the freewill offerings of the people and the priests, vowed willingly for the house of God that is in Jerusalem. With this money, then, you shall with all diligence buy bulls, rams, lambs, with their grain offerings and their drink offerings, and you shall offer them on the altar of the house of your God that is in Jerusalem. Now, whatever seems good to you and your brothers to do with the rest of the silver and gold, you may do according to the will of your God. The vessels that have been given you for the service of the house of your God, you shall deliver before the God of Jerusalem. And whatever else is required for the house of your God, which it fails to you to provide, you may provide it out of the king's treasury. And I, Artaxerxes, the king, make a decree to all the treasurers in the province beyond the river, whatever Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of the God of heaven, requires of you, let it be done with all diligence, up to 100 talents of silver, 100 cores of wheat, 100 baths of wine, 100 baths of oil and salt, without prescribing how much, whatever is decreed by the God of heaven, let it be done in full for the house of the God of heaven, lest his wrath be against the realm of the king and his sons. We also notify you that it shall not be lawful to impose tribute, custom, or toll on any one of the priests, the Levites, the singers, the doorkeepers, the temple servants, or other servants of this house of God. And you, Ezra, according to the wisdom of your God that is in your hand, appoint magistrates and judges who may judge all the people in the province beyond the river, all such as know the laws of your God. And those who do not know them, you shall teach. Whoever will not obey the law of your God and the law of the king, let judgment be strictly executed on him, whether for death or for banishment or for confiscation of his goods or for imprisonment. Well, that was the king's letter, which really effectively gives Ezra a free hand in establishing religious order in Jerusalem. So there's great goodwill and blessing from King Artaxerxes here. And he finishes the chapter here in verse 27 with, "Blessed be the Lord, the God of our fathers, who put such a thing as this into the heart of the king to beautify the house of the Lord that is in Jerusalem, and who extended to me his steadfast love before the king and his counselors, and before all the king's mighty officers, I took courage, for the hand of the Lord my God was on me, and I gathered leading men from Israel to go up with me. And then chapter 8 lists the genealogies of those who returned from captivity with Ezra. Among them is listed somebody called Daniel, son of Ithamar. Now, that might, Esther, raise the question as to whether this was the same prophet Daniel. Now, actually, I don't believe that it was the same Daniel, because for one thing, we are told that the prophet Daniel was of noble lineage, even though the names of his parents are not told us. And another thing is that Daniel was in his 90s when he was transported to Persia. Now, I don't envisage him or imagine him physically being able to make that return trip. So many of the names of those listed here are common names for the time. And it's not likely that any of those were people mentioned in previous episodes. Okay, little point clarified there. So let's skip down now past these list of returnees to Ezra chapter 8 and verse 15, which says, I gathered them to the river that runs to Ahava, and there we camped 3 days. As I reviewed the people and the priests, I found there none of the sons of Levi. Then I sent for Eleazar, Ariel, Shemaiah, Elnathan, Jarib, Elnathan, Nathan, Zechariah, and Meshullam, leading men, and for Jarib and Elnathan, there's obviously clearly a popular name, who were men of insight, and sent them to Edo, the leading man at the place Casiphia, telling them what to say to Edo and his brothers and the temple servants at the place Casiphia, namely, to send us ministers for the house of our God. And by the good hand of our God on us, they brought us a man of discretion of the sons of Mahli, the son of Levi, son of Israel, namely, Sherebiah, with his sons and kinsmen. Also, Hasabiah, and with him Jeshiah of the sons of Merari, with his kinsmen and their sons, besides 220 of the temple servants whom David and his officials had set apart to attend the Levites. These were all mentioned by name. Then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him a safe journey for ourselves, our children, and all our goods. For I was ashamed to ask the king for a band of soldiers and horsemen to protect us against the enemy on our way, since we had told the king, the hand of our God is for good on all who seek him, and the power of his wrath is against all who forsake him. So we fasted and implored our God for this, and he listened to our entreaty. So they had God's protection here against any thieves or bandits that might have accosted them on the way. And again, a little insight to Ezra's character here. He knows the king has given him free hand, but he's reticent to then ask, actually, can we have some protection on the way? Thinking, no, our God will protect us. But he knows not to step too far, even though perhaps he would have been freely able to do so. But there is a sensitivity and a self-awareness about Ezra that we pick up reading between the lines of these verses. And then Ezra sets apart some priests to guard the treasury. Verse 24 says, then I, Ezra, set apart 12 of the leading priests, Sherebiah, Hashabiah, and 10 of their kinsmen with them. And I weighed out to them the silver and the gold and the vessels, the offering for the house of our God that the king and his counselors and his lords and all Israel there presented had offered. I weighed out into their hand 650 talents of gold and silver vessels worth 200 talents and 100 talents of gold, 20 bowls of gold worth 1,000 darics and 2 vessels of fine bright bronze, as precious as gold. And I said to them, you are holy to the Lord, and the vessels are holy, and the silver and the gold are a freewill offering to the Lord, the God of your fathers. Guard them and keep them until you weigh them before the chief priests and the Levites and the heads of fathers' houses in Israel at Jerusalem within the chambers of the house of the Lord. So the priests and the Levites took over the weight of the silver and the gold and the vessels to bring them to Jerusalem, to the house of our God. Then we departed from the river Ahava on the 12th day of the first month to go to Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was on us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and from ambushes by the way. And we came to Jerusalem, and there we remained 3 days. And on the 4th day, within the house of our God, the silver and the gold and the vessels were weighed into the hands of Meremoth the priest, son of Uriah. And with him was Eleazar the son of Phinehas. And with them were the Levites, Jozabad the son of Jeshua, and Nadiah the son of Binui. And the whole was counted and weighed, and the weight of everything was recorded. At that time, those who had come from captivity, the returning exiles, offered burnt offerings to the God of Israel. 12 bulls for all Israel, 96 rams, 77 lambs, and as a sin offering, 12 male goats. All this was a burnt offering to the Lord. They also delivered the king's commissions to the king's satraps and to the governors of the province beyond the river. And they aided the people and the house of God. And that, Esther, is where chapter 8 ends.
Well, thank you, John. And yes, friend, this is Mission 66. And we're glad to be with you today as we look through the book of Ezra, looking at chapters 7 and 8. Now, John, I was kind of holding on to this one because you seem to think that it was important that Ezra could trace back his genealogy all the way back to Aaron. So why do you think that is important?
Yeah, not so much me thinking important, just the fact that it's given time. It's given time and it's given verses there. So we discern by that that it must be. Ezra became a key figure for the Judeans after their exile. And so I think the importance he ascribes to it is that the reader knows that he was a legitimate descendant of the priestly line of Aaron, because of the rules of worship as outlined in God's law demanded that the sacrifices and the ceremonies be conducted with this priestly oversight. There was a right way to do things. And remember that both the northern kingdom Israel and the southern kingdom Judah had failed because they disobeyed the covenant that they'd made with God. And this is why God had the northern kingdom to be overrun by the Assyrians, and why the southern kingdom Judah was allowed to be taken captive by the Babylonians. And their time in Babylon, well, it was meant as a time of change, renewal, purifying. And they had the prophecies that foretold that they would indeed return after 70 years. Now, they were not the same as before. So these people were not the same people as the ones that left. By now, they were softened through suffering, through captivity. The hearts were changed. They realized the error of the generations that had preceded them and how patient God had been with them. Decade in, decade out. Patience, patience, patience with so many other idols that they constructed, which were worthless, meaningless, and empty, and hollow, and irrelevant. And then you have the God of the universe, and God just looks down in patience upon these generations of people thinking, my goodness, why won't they follow me? Because in following me there is true hope and peace. and a life that they can't imagine, but they just go their own way. God identifies that Ezra, and we've seen some of his character just as we've read through these chapters, just coming out. There's a humility and a grace about this guy. And so God thinks this is the right person to lead the nation back to me, not only because he's a priest from the line of Aaron, but because he's a person of character. Now, there's nothing innate about him that makes him a good character as such, but that is God's gift to him, and his heart is, even as he's sinful like you and I are, his heart is to follow God, and God honours that. And so Ezra is the appointed man, and so Ezra has a real impact on history, and that's why we're reading his book here on Mission 66 today.
Okay, so John, we learned that Ezra didn't return in the first wave of returnees. Perhaps that should be a question. In fact, why was it that he didn't go with the first group of people? And why did the people have to go in these two waves? I imagine that perhaps they could have all just congregated and moved together in one caravan. Why was this divided in two groups?
Yeah, several reasons behind that. Now, the return of the people, first of all, was not compulsory. The decrees of Cyrus and Darius simply said anyone who wants to go may go. So no one was forced to go back. In fact, there was a large Jewish community that considered Babylon now to be their home. They had jobs, routines, families to raise. Some of them had actually been assimilated into the government and had positions of authority and responsibility. So after 70 years, you've had two or three generations born and raised in this place. And some of these guys would have considered this home. And so it certainly wasn't simple for them suddenly to uproot 70 years on and move to Judah or Jerusalem, which was still, of course, in ruins. The place was lacking infrastructure. It was a ruined city. So those first wave of returnees knew that they had this huge task ahead of them. And frankly, not everyone wanted to take that task on and would have been willing to go back. It was more desirable to stay where they were, or certainly that's what they thought. Do we go back to a ruined city or stay here? So that the second wave then comprised Judeans who were more willing to go back because certain things had now been put back into place. They would go back, for example, to a temple that was completed. There was now a society of pioneers who would have constructed that infrastructure and would have done work around the city, so life would have been more, well, livable, I suppose is the word. And so that's why there were actually three waves of returnees from Babylon to Jerusalem. The first was led by Zerubbabel in 538 BC, and that's mentioned at the start of Ezra. Those guys rebuilt the temple. And there's quite a gap, because the second wave is many decades later, really, was led by Ezra himself, and that was 458 BC. Some 80 years later. And then the third wave comes later again in 444 BC, so 14 years later. And that wave of returnees is led by Nehemiah, and that was when the wall was rebuilt around the city.
Well, I can tell you that I'm loving the dates and the history, really just, you know, identifying things in my mind. But, you know, when we understand that this return wasn't mandatory, it really does explain why it happens in stages. So, you know, something else that stood out to me was that each caravan or each group that returned brought gold and silver and other valuable goods, kind of reminding me of what happened with the Israelites when they left Egypt. Nonetheless, in this context, where did the people get all this wealth from? Because, you know, they were captives. Where did they get it?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the gold and the silver that is spoken about in that last part of chapter 8, it describes mainly, in the main, objects that had been taken originally from Solomon's temple by the Babylonians 70 years before. Now, the people had managed to keep a lot of that, if not all of it, intact over those years of captivity. And furthermore, the people Well, they weren't kept in prisons in Babylon. So it's, you know, when we think of the word captivity, I guess the second question is, well, what kind of captivity was it? And as we understand it, Esther, they were evidently free to live, to work, to earn a living, to add value to the society in which they now lived. So that meant they were actually able to accumulate wealth. And so many were willing to give toward the newly established city or the newly establishing city of Jerusalem. And the truth is, as we know, that God is the ultimate owner, isn't he, of gold and silver. So he's the one who gives us the ability to earn a living. And that brings to mind, you know, the challenge of what we do with what God has given us, because it was Jesus himself who said that where our treasure is, that's where our heart will also be. And here, these returnees, well, their hearts are back in Jerusalem. Some of them would be going back for the first time. Many of them would be. But they wanted to go back, and they wanted to honour the God of Israel, but the only God of the planets and the universe, and they understood that, and so they returned.
Awesome. All right, well, now in verse 22, it says, Ezra didn't ask the king for an armed guard to protect the people as they were journeying to Jerusalem. I mean, why wouldn't he? I mean, they were carrying all kinds of valuable items. Why would he not have asked for an armed escort?
Well, yeah, as I mentioned in the passage, he was actually knew not to overstep too much. There was humility, there was a self-awareness, and he had told the king that we trust in God's hand. So I guess once you say we're trusting this and God is going before us, you kind of don't need to ask for armed guard. The king might think, hang on, I thought you said your God was going before you. So he makes his statement and he lives and travels by it.
Well, it's wonderful indeed to just read about the faith and the trust that the people had in God, John. So I think we should just go ahead and summarize what we've learned in Ezra chapter 7 and 8.
Yeah, let's do that. So look, the book of Ezra overall is about the return of Judean exiles to Jerusalem, and they come in three separate waves. The first wave, led by Zerubbabel, focuses on rebuilding the temple. The second wave, led by Ezra, marks this spiritual revival. Ezra, a scribe and priest descended from Aaron, he emphasized studying, obeying, and teaching God's law. He gave himself to that. So he was the right man to lead the revival because of his lineage, but because of his knowledge of this Bible, sure, but because of his heart. And God saw the heart of Ezra. And King Artaxerxes, well, he had his favor. He supported Ezra, and he grants him not only access to go, but resources plus authority to restore worship practices when they return to the land of Judah.
Well, thank you, dear friend, for taking the time to listen to Mission 66 today. This is where we'll conclude our episode. But hey, I encourage you to keep this conversation going as we journey through the book of Ezra. Now, how do you do that? You can find us today on our social media pages. We're on Facebook and on Instagram. And there you can share your thoughts and leave your questions on what you've heard in this episode. And of course, like the page, because our community is growing because of your interaction with this program. Well, friend, we're looking forward to joining you next time. I'm Esther for John and our entire team saying, see you next time on Mission 66.
That's all for today's Mission 66. But before you go, make sure to download your free study guide at mission66.org. It's your key to diving deeper into the Bible with personal application. Stay on this biblical journey with John and Esther, and let's explore God's Word together. Your study guide is waiting at mission66.org. Plus, you can join the conversation, ask questions, or help us spread the word with a donation. Check out mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry partnership of Transworld Radio and Dr. Luis Seau.